Kate, good morning.
Morning, Sean.
Thanks very much for joining us on the program.
Happy to.
Now, looking at these auto reply, systems that we already have in place, how commonplace are they actually becoming?
A lot more so than people necessarily realize, I think. They're not just in social media. For instance, most customer services of larger companies now start with auto-reply. In fact, even if you're on quote-unquote live chat, what happens is often you start with bots who will try and give you automated answers and then just flag to humans when they recognize something they might not be able to handle.
Of course, these are kind of systems we almost take for granted.
Absolutely. And it's funny, I think sometimes we realize it without realizing it. Other times we don't recognize it. But it's getting to the point where it's so ubiquitous that we hardly register whether it is or not until we hit frustration point, I think.
So looking at Google's new entry into the game, how is their new experiment actually set to differ from the systems we see currently in place?
Fundamentally, it's the same sort of thing, I think, with a lot more resources poured into it than other companies can necessarily afford to support. For instance, they use machine learning, artificial intelligence, deep learning. A lot just have machine learning, not deep learning, and that's a matter of resources behind it. But for instance, with Smart Reply, I think they're looking at having three neural networks all working simultaneously. You've got the one that's analyzing the question being given or the email it's replying to or whatever. Plus, it's another network is immediately after that, and immediately micro, nanoseconds, looking for a reply. And then there's a third neural network, possibly, depending, looking for duplication or mistakes in the reply formulated by the second one. So it all gets very tricky. Essentially, Google isn't doing anything radically different, just Google have access to so much more of our data than, I think people are very unaware how much of their data is available to how many people, but Google more than most.
Well, there are a couple of disturbing aspects to this, I would say, Kate. I mean, firstly, the first aspect of it is this sort of, auto-reply system. These computer minds making the decisions for you, how you are replying back to people, taking the words out of our mouths with this kind of advanced analysis. I mean, you see arguments back and forth whether technology actually brings us closer together or drives us apart, given we are, staring at our screens all the time. But often when we're staring at our screens, we are communicating with other human beings. This does seem to take it to a new level where we just outsource the job of communicating with people to a computer.
It does. I'm encountering more and more people who are sort of cutting themselves off from social networks and so forth as they realize how impersonalized and depersonalized their lives are becoming. But it cuts both ways. For instance, I can start my day with 200-300 emails in my inbox. if I've got a robot recognizing the spam and the garbage reliably, so I don't have to go check my junk box and find the valuable ones it deleted, that saves me a whole bunch of time. If I can have the same machine learning automating the replies to the really basic ones that, seriously, a robot can handle for me, it means that I have a lot more time to dedicate to real answers and real engagement and real interactivity with the ones that really need my attention. And that works in social life too. So, if you've just, especially if you have friends who chitter-chatter, which can waste an awful lot of your time, you can let the auto-replies handle that. But if you want real conversation, really deepening your relationships with real friends, no, you don't want auto-reply handling that for you.
Now, of course, the other disturbing aspect of this, which you kind of touched on already, is the amount of data that we are freely giving away to companies like Google and Facebook. Do you think, allowing them to access your information to literally speak for you is, again, an escalation in the kind of way we let these companies and this technology into our lives, into all our personal data?
It almost isn't an escalation. It's almost a clarification of what's really there.
I think
when the bot's automating this, you know, the deep learning and so forth is analyzing your email and your phone conversation so well that it can answer for you. You use the phrase putting words into your mouth. It's really taking words out of our mouth and reusing them. When it can do that, it's sort of a bit more in your face that, ooh, these machines are really getting to know me. Who else can do that? But that capacity is already there. The data, I think Australia's way, way, way behind Europe on this. Europe is much better at privacy and making data ownership a more recognized important issue. And Australia really needs to catch up fast. But the thing is, the country won't until the individuals do. And I think as individuals, we are very, very, I don't know if it's determinedly or unconsciously ignorant and happy to remain ignorant. Just I think we're as a society, we've lost some of that good old cultural Australian cynicism and are willing to trade off privacy and a whole lot of risk for convenience and trends.
Well, Kate, like I said, I find it a little bit of a disturbing development, but indeed, definitely one we'll keep our eyes on. Really appreciate you joining us this morning.
Oh, it was a pleasure, Sean. Thank you.